matches the ships that go sailing.
All right. Hello. Rabbit, rabbit, rabbit. July 1st. Rabbit, rabbit, rabbit. How is everyone? We are live in the Skyline studio here until 4 o'clock. Coming up, we have another round of Know Your Onion. That's where we get two contestants on the line. They each play a round. Tom will read a news headline, and you have to figure out whether it's real or from the satirical newspaper, The Onion. And we're going to talk about the fact that you can kiss the Blarney Stone again now. Christopher Reeve's Superman cape is now at auction. And also annoying things that tourists do in other countries. And tourists that come to Chicago, what bugs you about them? 312-981-7200 is the phone number. It's the Team Hochberg phone line. So as we enter phase four, as we've entered phase four, bars and restaurants are opening. You know, they can't go to full capacity, and there are rules and social distancing and mask wearing and all that stuff. So it's a different time, but things are starting to open up. One of the most legendary bars in this city is in the Uptown neighborhood, and it's, of course, the Green Mill, which hosts incredible jazz, live music, and it's got an incredible history. Dave Gemmelow is the owner of the Green Mill, and we wanted to talk to Dave about the mill in general and the history of it and what it's like to slowly open again. Dave, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, Nick, how are you?
Good. You know, I've been to your bar a couple times.
Yeah, I heard that. I told Nicole I was going to do this thing, and she says, well, is that Nick? He has like a long last name or three syllables or something. I go, yeah. She goes, oh, he comes in here.
Yeah. I mean,
he's a nice guy.
I stopped drinking a while ago, Dave, so I haven't been in the bar in a long time, but there was a period of time when I was kind of there after 2 a.m. every night.
Oh, my man. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Appreciate it.
So let's talk a little bit about the Green Mill. I mean, it's a historic bar. How far back does it date?
1907.
And it wasn't called the Green Mill at that time, correct?
No, it was called Pop Morris's Roadhouse, and then 1910 it was changed to the Green Mill.
Okay. Pop Morris's Roadhouse. Do we know who Pop Morris is?
He was an old guy.
Yeah?
Yeah. I don't know much about him. I know that he owned the joint and that a lot of people would stop there on the way to see the dead relatives in the cemetery behind the Green Mill.
Oh.
It was like a spot to stop, you know?
Oh, I see. So they would go there and then go to the cemetery right there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, have a little something to drink and then go see the dead relatives. Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. Boy, there's so much history in the Green Mill and the association with what's the story now? Let's clear some of this up. What's the association with Al Capone?
Okay, so Al Capone didn't own the Green Mill, which a lot of people think. It was a machine gun Jack McGurn owned the Green Mill, or actually more correct would be he had a management contract with from the Shimalis brothers, who were the original owners of the Green Mill.
Hmm.
Kind of so during Prohibition, Machine Gun Jack McGurn took over the joint. Well, he's the guy that supposedly did the St. Valentine's Day massacre for Al Capone.
Hmm.
So there's a little connection there. But entertainer Joe E. Lewis was a singer, and that was Al Capone's favorite entertainer. So he would come to see Joe E. Lewis at the Green Mill.
And did he have? Then, Al Capone's? Al Capone had a special seat, right, in the place, so that he could see the front door and the back door.
Yeah, the front door and the side door. He would sit in this one booth, and then you could see both doors, so anyone coming in. And then some historian told me that no one was ever allowed to leave or come in once he was in there, and he tipped everyone $100 and blah blah blah.
Wow,
he's actually like a really nice guy when he's in the joint, but, you know,
obviously
he's happy. Yeah.
Yeah.
And another thing I heard is every time he walked in, they had to start playing. What is that? The George Gershwin tune.
Rhapsody in Blue.
Yeah. Rhapsody in Blue. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. That was Al Capone. I love the fact that that's Al Capone's favorite, is that Rhapsody in Blue was Al Capone. Al Capone's
favorite. Right. Right. Yeah. And you know, his nickname was Snarky.
I didn't know that. Snarky?
Yeah.
Where did that come from?
I mean, doesn't it? I forget. Nicole, I worked with her tonight. I just got home a little bit ago, and she likes all the history stuff. So she told me about Al Capone's name being Snarky, and I read why, and I don't remember, but I just think this guy that kills everyone has a nickname, Snarky.
Yeah,
it just isn't very bad sounding.
Yeah, no, it's not. It's not real tough. Oh, look at Snarky! Yeah. Look at Snarky with his machine gun.
Yeah, right. No kidding. I laughed.
Man. So, now you've owned the mill for how long? 34 years, right?
34 years. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. How did it come to you?
Oh, well, the long story, but I'll try to make it short. My dad used to go there in the 30s. You know, he was a big stud from the South Side, and him and Duke would go, his buddy Duke would go to the Aragon Ballroom, and they'd meet a couple of girls, and they'd go to the Green Mill for a nightcap. So, you know, my parents are divorced, so he's living on the North Side. I'm on the South Side. I drive up to see him when I'm like 16, and he'd tell me all these stories. I go, wow, that's cool. So when I drop them off in Rogers Park and I had to go back to the South Side, I would drive by the Green Mill, and it was like cool looking. You know, I'm 16 years old and all the lights and everything. And then when the bums rushed the car, I would have to take off because I was scared, you know. And so then later, like now it's, what is it, 1984. My dad dies in 19. I had bought the Deja Vu already in 83.
Yeah.
My dad dies in 84. Now it's 85, and I'm dating a girl. We go to dive bars up in Uptown all the time. I go, hey, let's go where my dad used to go, to Green Mill. She goes, yeah, okay. We go in there, and I mean, you know, you're walking over guys passed out on the floor. There's guys shooting up heroin in the booth. There's two women beating each other up in the bathroom. I go to the bartender, you want me to break that up? He goes, I don't care. Let them kill each other. I fell in love with the joint. I thought it was the greatest place in the world. You know, but it's not how you really want to run it.
Right, right.
It was just, I loved it. So, you know, I go, I'm talking to this girl. She didn't give a crap, but I'm telling her, I go, you know, I would do this, and I would do this, and I would do that. She goes, yeah, yeah, get me another drink. And then, I end up finding out the owner is Steve Brend, and he had been there since 1938. He owned it since 1960, but he had worked there, you know, since 1938.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
I talked to him, and, you know, he's in debt. He had a bad leg that was really, you know, open wound sore from World War II that he still had, and it's 1985.
Oh.
And, you know, his wife walked with a walker, and his stepson was, like, helping run the joint, and he was a speedball addict.
Oh.
It was just a mess.
Okay, hold on, Dave.
So,
Dave, hang on, okay? We got to take a quick break, and I want to get right back to that story, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
All right, Dave Gemmelo is with us. He is the owner of the Green Mill. They're open. They're ready for business, of course, with the rules that are set in place, and social distancing and all that stuff, but they're back and going. The legendary Green Mill. We'll talk more about it on 720 WGN. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Skyline studio here until 4 o'clock. At 3:30, we'll have another round of Know Your Onion. That's where you have to tell the difference between a real news headline and a headline from the satirical newspaper, The Onion. Annoying things that tourists do in other countries. What about tourists that do things in Chicago that make you nuts? And we're going to talk about how you can now kiss the Blarney Stone again in Ireland if you choose to do so. All right. Right now, we're talking with Dave Gemmelo. He's the owner of the Green Mill, which recently, because of the opening up of the city, got to open up again. And we were just talking about the history of it and when Dave decided to buy it. Dave, so we're back to 1985, and there's people laying on the floor. There's bums everywhere. There's people shooting up heroin. Girls fighting in the bathroom, and nobody really cares. And you fell in love with the place. Let's continue.
Yes. So, the son was the eight ball addict, and he was helping running it. And Steve was in debt, and you know, we got along real well. And so I said, like, I'd like to buy the joint. So me and him kind of start talking. He says, you got to talk to the landlords. And the landlords, they like my idea, you know, trying to do a jazz club, because there's other guys trying to buy it. And all they wanted was the light fixtures to sell, like, all that cool stuff, you know, for a bunch of money.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So
sure.
you know, so the landlord say, yeah, let this young guy do it. You know, he seems okay. So me and Steve arrive at a price, which was a great deal for me, and it was also a great deal for him because the landlords could have just thrown him out because he was in debt, you know, but he was a great guy. And it worked out. I had to get a new license and stuff like that, and it took 6 weeks to get the license and clean everything up and reupholster and fix things up. And then I got open. The funny thing is, you know, I got a 4 o'clock license like a month later. And to do that, you had to get like signatures from all the voters within 500 feet of the joint saying they don't care.
Oh, yeah.
If it's a 4 o'clock license. I did it myself, and I'm going to these apartments, and I'm in shooting galleries. You know what that is? Where everyone's on the mattress shooting heroin.
Yeah.
And I know all these guys because I was hanging out in there all of 1985. And I go, hey, I'm buying a green mill. Can you sign this for me? And they'd sign, oh, yeah, you're going to let us in. I go, yeah. Be just like it was. But then, you know, I didn't let them in because you didn't want that stuff.
Right. So you ended up getting it, changing it into a jazz club. And it's become one of the premier jazz clubs in the country, Dave. As you know.
It's worked out well. I'm really happy with it. And, you know, you have all these ideas when you're young and dumb and naive, and you just work really hard, and it ends up where it worked out the way you wanted it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So it's pretty cool.
Yeah. When I was a drinking man, it was one of my favorite places to go to. There's just no question about it. I love the history. I love everything about it. Featured in a ton of movies as well, Dave.
Yeah. Yeah, it's you were talking about. I was listening to you on the way home from work, and you're talking about Carl Reiner, Ocean's something. Ocean's 12, I think, was filmed there.
Yeah.
And, lots of them. Prelude to a Kiss, High Fidelity. TV shows and stuff. It's good.
It got blown up in Thief.
Oh, yeah, that was before my time. But, yeah, because there were guys that hung out there when I bought it, and they were in the movie, you know?
Yeah.
And Steve, they love Steve, James Caan, and who's the director? Michael Mann.
Yeah, Michael Mann.
Yeah, they put a new floor down for him. They reupholstered stuff. They did all kinds of work for him, and then they blew up the front of the joint. The vestibule still held together with an L bracket because they blew up a little bit more than they needed to.
Oh boy. Wow. Yeah. So, you know, I mean, I love the Green Mill so much that every time I watch Thief, I get very sad when they blow it up.
Right. Well, you know, they took the sign down and put up a fake sign and blew that up.
Oh, okay. That's how they did it.
Yeah, because I got pictures in the old scrapbook of them taking the sign down. But that was a lot of work to do that.
I bet.
I think they do everything with digitally these days, don't they?
Yeah, pretty much. You know? Yeah, they don't really. They're not going to really blow stuff up anymore. I don't think that's what's going to happen.
Right.
And what about the? Let's talk a little bit about the tunnels that are underneath the bar.
Okay. Well, you know, there's a trap door behind the bar, and you go down that, and then you go around a few ways, and then there's these fire doors, these big steel doors, and you get you unlock it, and you open the one, then you open the other one. Then there's a series of tunnels. Now, it's not as juicy as it used to be, because in the old days, there was no lights, and you could get across the street, like under the street, and you were able to get out on the Lawrence Avenue and out on the Broadway. Nowadays, it's like there's lights, and there's people using areas of it for storage and that. So it's, you know, they're still there, but it's just not like as cool as it was, you know?
Yeah. Now, was that also like a thing that Al Capone would use in case he had to get out and not be seen?
Yeah. Yeah. So in the old days, you know, if like, okay, let's just say even it's prohibition, you're still getting the liquor up there, but it's in coffee cups and stuff. But if you want to have a real party like Al Capone would want to have, you'd be down in the tunnels and there's rooms on to the sides. They'd have a room, and that would be like an anything goes room, if you know what I mean. You know, drinking, debauchery, gambling, girls, all the liquor you want, free flowing. And then if there was a raid or anything, somehow they tell them down there, and the guys aren't going to come back up through a trap door into the joint where the coppers are. They're going to go out through the tunnels and be on Lawrence Avenue or Broadway walking down the street. And when the copper says, hey, I was looking for you, Joe, Italian guy. And, you know, the guy says, "Kid, leave me alone. I'm just going to the movie show with my girl, you know."
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Then, that's how they got away with it.
Yeah. God, there's so much great history in the Green Mill. And it feels that, you know, when you know, Dave, every time I would go in there, you could feel the history of the place. You know what I mean? And that's still, it's palpable, you know?
Well, because you don't change much. I mean, you know, I bought it in 86. I just cleaned it up. But, I mean, it's still the same frames and the pictures and the back bar. And, you know, it just got the character all over it from the days of when that was going on. So I guess it is easy to feel it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it is, and it's just such a, you know, it's just such a great, it's just such a great place. And you, so it was, yeah. It was a month after you bought it that it got the, that you got the 4 o'clock license.
Yeah,
and
yeah, and then go on.
I was going to say that worked out pretty well for you, huh?
Oh, it was great because I always wanted to do the like a late night jam session type thing.
Yeah.
You know, because I was reading a book, Swing the Bop, by Ira Gittler, when I was trying to buy the joint. And it was all about the transition of swing to bebop and jazz, you know. And it was all oral history. And they were talking about Minton's Playhouse and Park Monroe's Uptown House in New York with, you know, Charlie Parker, Dizzy Gillespie. And they were doing that called modern jazz, which, of course, was bebop. But they couldn't do it during the regular sets, like the 8 to midnight. They had to do it like 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning into the wee hours. So that's how I got the idea to do it at the Green Mill. You know, your main band on Friday plays 9 to 1, then you have a jam session afterwards.
Yeah.
And Saturday you have the main band 8 to 12, then you have a late night band. So it's kind of like a hang, but you couldn't do that if you didn't have a 4 o'clock license. You know, I mean, we're playing jazz till 5 o'clock in the morning on Saturday night.
Yeah.
You know, you leave the joint, the sun's coming up, and you're half jagged up. It's kind of cool, you know. Where can you do that anywhere in the world?
You're bringing back a lot of memories for me, Dave.
Well, I'm glad you don't have to do that anymore. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, now, you've always been a jazz guy, Dave?
Well, you know, since, like, eighth grade, I think, you know, my dad gave me a... what is it, the 1938 Carnegie Hall Jazz Festival record, Benny Goodman. And I kind of just jumped on it, and I loved it. And, you know, I played a piano a little bit, but I'm not a piano player. The guys would call me an instrument owner. But, you know, so I just got into that because all my friends were like in Robert Plant's...
Zeppelin. Zeppelin, Led Zeppelin.
Yeah, Zeppelin. Yeah, yeah, all that kind of stuff. He goes to the joint a lot, by the way, Robert Plant. But
is that right?
Oh, yeah. Whenever he's in town, he always stops in. I didn't even know who he was. and then now we talk to him all the time. He's a great guy.
Oh, that's awesome.
But I was all, you know, I got into jazz and blues and stuff, and jazz is what I really got into. So, you know, I got to know a little bit, you know.
Yeah. Well, that's great, man, and you've turned it into you know the one of the premier jazz clubs in the country. Dave, hang on, okay?
Yeah, sure.
All right, Dave Gemmelow is with us. He owns the Green Mill. We want to talk about what it's like now. You know, what it was like to be closed down, and now with these restrictions, what it's like. And if you have questions, or if you've ever been to the Green Mill, and you just want to share your memories. It's a wonderful place. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200 if you want to talk about the Green Mill with the owner, Dave Gemmelow. We'll continue our conversation here on 720 WGN. Hey, it's Nick DiGilio on 720 WGN. We're live in the Skyline studio, and we're here until 4, as we are every weekday night into the morning. At 4 o'clock, we go over to Bradley Place, the TV side of WGN, and get some news and information from them. And then at 5 o'clock, the one and only Bob Surratt, the legendary Bob Surratt, has your morning drive. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to jump in here. We're talking to Dave Gemmelow, who's the owner of the Green Mill. And if you have any memories about the Green Mill or questions or comments, 312-981-7200. Dave, you know, you mentioned before the break that Robert Plant from Led Zeppelin was kind of a regular. Who are some of the other famous people that hang out there? I know that, you know, lots of people, when they're in town, they visit the Green Mill.
Well, Vince Vaughn comes, he was coming in a lot, not that much lately, but, you know, he did that one movie there, The Dilemma.
Yeah.
And he was singing out there a lot. It was kind of funny. He was coming in so much that, you know, he'd get carded and things like that because, no, like, Big Al was working the front door, and he doesn't even know it's Vince Vaughn. He just cards him. Vince Vaughn brings out, yeah. takes out his ID. So one time, Vince comes, and Big Al sees him and says, let me see your ID. And sees, he goes, oh, I know you. You're the guy that got your car towed last week because his car was in the across the street in the parking lot. It got towed, and it was a big thing where everyone's trying to help him. Here's where you got to go, do this and do that.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's all Big Al recognized him from was his car. And then he finds out, oh, that's Vince Vaughn. He's like an actor. So he's trying to invite him to his picnic he has every year and stuff like that, you know.
Big
I got a kick out of that. And then I got drunk with Johnny Depp once.
Because
they were doing that movie, the John Dillinger
Public
thing,
Enemies,
you know?
Yeah, Public Enemies.
Public Enemies, yeah. And they were going to be filming at the bank across the street. So Michael Mann, I think he was the director of that, too. He told Depp, go to the Green Mill, because I did the movie Thief there. Remember the one with the blowing up the joint? And so Depp came in with a bodyguard. He was very nice, and he wanted to talk to me because, you know, wanted to hear the history of the joint. So I sat down with him. He was great.
Yeah.
You know, everyone's going like gaga. No one bothered him because, like, we don't let no one bother people, you know. But he was a nice guy, and he came in later that week to see Deep Blue Organ Trio, and he come in with Stephen Dorff and some other people.
Yeah.
I guess that guy's an actor, too.
Yeah, he is. Yep.
And so it's a pretty funny thing. You want me to tell you this funny story?
Of course.
Okay, so, you know, I wasn't there, but this is a story I heard. Depp loved the band, and he wanted to talk to Chris Foreman, the organist, you know, who's blind. And Chris, you know, he was sitting at the bar, and Depp went and talked to him, and they had a nice chat and everything. And then when Depp and his guys left, Jason was walking, the manager was walking Chris Foreman to the cab to go home. And Chris goes to Jason, he goes, yeah, that guy Johnny, he was a real nice guy. What's he do? Who's he? And Jason has to say, well, he's probably the most famous actor in the world. And Chris goes, oh, okay, well, he's a nice guy. And he got in his cab and left. And I thought that was cool.
That's fantastic. Nobody recognized him. Yeah. I love the fact that Big Al carded.
Chris is blind anyway. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's true. It's funny because I love that Big Al carded Vince Vaughn. I just think that's fantastic.
I know. It's just so official. And Vince loved all of that, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
He liked just getting treated like normal, you know.
Yeah.
And it was kind of fun. Yeah.
So, you know, when you did the restoration of the bar, when you first bought it, what kind of things did you have? What kind of things did you have to change?
Well, like, you know, I built the big stage and the dance floor, and then, you know, like, we had to do a lot of electrical work and some plumbing, and then, just reupholster all the booths, refinish the wood on the bar and the front type part of the bar, you know, where your legs go. We cleaned all that up.
Yeah.
And, you know, some minor stuff in the bathrooms and just clean everything. But it was a major lot of work.
I bet.
For, like, a guy with no money, you know, it was kind of tough, but we got it done.
Yeah. Now, and how slowly did business start to pick up?
Well, we opened, what was it, June 19th, and it was, you know, opening night was killer. But then after that, it was sporadic. It was just okay. I was charging $1 to get in during the week and $2 on Saturday, you know, with live music six nights.
Yeah.
And then Larry Cart from, was he the Sun-Times or the Tribune? He was a writer.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote it up that he loved the joint. I don't know if he'd ever even been there. But after that, people just started coming in, and it just kind of, you know, snowballs. Like, you know, you have a good product and you don't rip anybody off, and the people say, oh boy, there's this joint up north, you know, let's go there.
Yeah.
And then people actually, like, south of Belmont would even come up, you know what I mean?
Well,
before that, it was just you know, guys that are pioneers, they want to go to a dive bar in a neighborhood that's scary, and they still go anyway. But now you're getting, like, Mighty Blue King started playing there, and then all of a sudden Lincoln Parker started coming in, and, you know, you just do some things to, make it a destination spot.
Yeah,
you know?
And it certainly is. I mean, there's no question about it. It certainly is. What's it like to, you know, to have watched Uptown change just so much over these years? Because you're talking about the, you know, 1985, Uptown was kind of a nightmare at that time.
It was rough.
What's it like to have watched that neighborhood change?
Well, it's great because it's still like a colorful neighborhood.
It is.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's not like going to Lincoln Park. It's not completely gentrified, you know, but it's nice that the crime isn't so bad. And
right.
There's just all different kinds of people walking around, and they're not afraid to walk around. There's not like guys getting shot and, you know, stuff like, you know, just bad stuff going on. There's a Starbucks across the street. I mean, can you believe that? You know, I mean, when that thing opened, they had no idea what they were in for.
Yeah.
And then they had to get like people working there that knew how to handle stuff.
Yeah.
But now it's, you know, now you could go in there and it's like a regular Starbucks.
Yeah.
So it's nice to see that. And then, you know, the one thing is like you say, oh man, I should have bought that building. Oh man, I should have bought that building. Cause now these buildings are worth a ton of money, but you know, you're busy trying to run a joint at the time, so
yeah,
it's good.
It's interesting to see, you know, having you know gone to Uptown a lot. You know, when I was a kid, we would go to movies, you know, at the Uptown Theater and at the Riviera and things like that, and just to see how that neighborhood has changed. But you're right though about Dave; it's not completely gentrified. It still has a personality, and it still has an edge to it. There's no question about it.
Right. We still got a guy in the corner, Juicy, who, you know, he's just relentless on bothering people.
Yeah.
But he's kind of like our guy, even though we don't like him, you know, but it's just, you know.
He's a staple.
We're yelling at each other tonight. Yeah.
He's a staple in the neighborhood, man. There's no question about it. What was the first act to play the Green Mill when you started running the place?
Oh wow, that's great that you asked it, because I was just thinking about it the other day. Stardust. It was Joette Waters. She ran this band called Stardust, and it was like an Andrew Sisters band.
Oh,
a guy named Phil was a piano player, bass player Mark Litton on drums, and then the three women singers. And I used to see them at one of Roger Greenfield's joints or something.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, this is cool, because it kind of fits that 1940s thing. So I had them, and then Tommy Ponce played there early on, Mike Finnerty, Ed Peterson, Brad Good, Deja Vu Big Band, viola player, Susie Hansen.
Mm-hmm.
Those were the ones that started out. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. You've had thousands of acts play in your place. What are some of your favorites, most memorable performances?
Well, I guess my favorite, I like the Battle of the Saxes, and that I got from that book I was telling you about earlier. You know, where you have the two or three saxophone players playing like a battle, but they're not really fighting, and then a rhythm section, piano, bass, drums. And my favorite was when we had Von Freeman, Ed Peterson, and Clifford Jordan. Clifford Jordan is like such a big deal. Just to have him alone would be a big deal. But he loved it. And we'd have those three monster Chicago-style saxophone, tenor sax players.
Yeah.
And then like Jody Christian on piano, like who was on bass? John Whitfield, I think, and Wilbur Campbell or Robert Shai on drums. You don't get anything better than that.
Yeah.
And you never see that anywhere. We still do it now, but we just use two saxophone players because it costs too much to do three. But,
yeah.
You know, that's like one of my favorite things. And then Sheila Jordan, you know, she's 91 years old. She still plays there.
Yeah.
And Dave Liebman, you know, Harry Connick Jr.'s played there. He used to hang out there in the 80s
mm-hmm.
when he was in his big band, when he was real famous. And he would come in with Jerry Weldon and Dave Schumacher. And those guys would sit in, but Harry wouldn't sit in with the band because Jody Christian was playing piano. And he's like, Harry didn't want to go up there because he didn't have the chops to go after Jody.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
On the piano.
Yeah.
So then years later, you know, he's getting better and better and better, and he's still real famous, of course. And he called, he didn't call, people called and said, Harry wants to play at the joint. I go, okay, that's cool. Let's work something out. He says, but he ain't going to sing. I go, that's fine. I don't care. You know, I know I could sell it out.
Yeah.
And we did. And his chops were great. He was a great piano player, and that's what he wanted to do. He wanted to play in a real joint, playing a piano with his band, and it was killer. And then right at the end of each set, he sang a couple of tunes, and all the women are swooning and stuff. It was pretty cool.
That's pretty cool. That's awesome that he just wanted to play in a place that had so much history, you know?
Yeah, because, you know, he used to hang out there in the 80s, and he remembered that, and he knows it's a cool joint, and he wanted to play just a joint. You know, not like, you know, he's playing all these big, giant, fancy places, and this is like he could come and who's going to say, no, we won't let you play if you don't sing? I don't care.
Yeah.
I'm happy he's even in there.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it worked great. I think we charged $30. That's nothing.
Yeah. Just to see Harry Connick Jr., especially in such a great venue and a smaller venue where you can see actually just be in the same room with the guy.
Right. Yeah, you're sitting there watching him. You're 3 feet away.
Yeah.
You know, it's great.
Yeah, yeah. So much history at this place, Dave. I got to tell you, and it's just a great place. Let's take a quick break here, Dave, and then I want to talk to you about what's been going on during this pandemic and how the reopen is going. Okay.
You got it.
Okay, Dave Gemmelo is with us, owner of the Green Mill. What great stories, man! Such great stories. That place has so much history. If you have any Green Mill memories or questions or comments, we'd love to hear from you. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. More coming up. Nick DiCilio here on 720 WGN. And we're live in the Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. And we're here until 4 o'clock. We are going to talk about some annoying things that tourists do when they're in Chicago or big mistakes that you made while you were traveling. The Blarney Stone can be kissed again. And annoying things tourists do in other countries. And if you've ever made a mistake when you were on vacation. We also play back some classic Johnny Carson show you can watch on Antenna TV every night. And we suggest that you do. We're going to play back a bit that Ronald Reagan did. Who's on first? When we do that at 2:30. And at 3:30, it's another round. It's a Wednesday morning with another round of Know Your Onion. And the news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. We are having a conversation with Dave Gemmelo, owner of the legendary Green Mill Bar in Uptown. Dave, we got a couple of people who are on the line here that want to say hello.
Okay.
All right. Here's Joyce on WGN. Hi, Joyce.
Hi, Mr. Gemmelo. I am an avid jazz fan.
Oh, Joyce. I know who you are.
Do you know who I am?
Yeah, you're the nice little lady that came
legendary
jazz.
Hold on, one at a time. Go ahead, Dave.
I put your car in the parking lot for you that one time, remember?
I do. Do you remember? Oh,
yeah.
My goodness, I can't believe it.
I recognize your voice, yeah.
And, you know, with all this going on, and I saw the end of the paper today, and I said, you know, this is the place to go. What I'm interested in knowing is, how can I get a roster of who is going to be there when?
Well, there's a new thing called the internet.
The internet.
Yeah, right now, if you go to our website, you know, because I'm kind of booking things as we go, look at the website, greenmilljazz.com, and you could see what's booked. You know, I'm adding things now where I'm like at least a week ahead here, so we're getting there.
Yeah.
So you could do that. Is that cool, Joyce?
Do I need a reservation or
no? Just check it out online. Check it out online. Go to greenmilljazz.com and the schedules are up there.
Okay, and I could just come. Are you
no
doing the social distancing and all that stuff?
You can just come in, Joyce.
Okay, great.
Okay,
is Paul going to be there? You know,
not right this second because I'm not doing any singers or horns right now because it's too much.
With the pandemic,
out.
I
yeah,
got you
right. Okay.
I got you. Well, whatever it is, it'll be greatly appreciated, and I can't wait to be there.
Okay, thanks, Joyce.
All right, Joyce.
Take care. There you go. That's nice, huh, Dave?
Yeah, it's funny. I remember her voice right away. She's got to be like, you know, she's up there.
Yeah.
Little short thing, walks really slow. She's a very nice woman.
<That's>
I don't
great.
Know how to say anything.
That's great.
Yeah.
Here's Robert on WGN. Hey, Robert.
Well, it's nice to meet the owner. A friend of mine owns Kingston Mines. So about 10 years back, and I got sick and tired of listening to that crap. And then they told me to go over to your place. So I went over there, and it was fantastic. I mean, it's absolutely, and I was there on a Saturday, and I was one of the guys who helped sweep up the floor, and they finally kicked me out. I think it was 5:30 in the morning or something. But the super, I mean, just the people that you have working for you. Because I was like, I know you have a 4 o'clock license, and let me finish my beer. He goes, no, you got that beer, and then you got two more beers, and you got a shot. And I was like, I love you. I found my home, you know. But you have a great, great place. It's just fantastic.
Thank you.
And again, if you love that type of music, and I do, it's now with all the crap that's going on, I know it's going to take a while before you can bring back horns and things of that sort. But you'll get there again.
Yeah. All right, Robert.
Well,
thank you.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Robert.
No worries, man. All right. Have a great
night.
Take
care. All right.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's talk about some of the restrictions that are happening right now. Now, obviously, you're not open until 4:00. Currently, your hours are shorter, but you are doing live music. You said no horns, no vocals. Let's talk a little bit about what's been going on and some of the restrictions and how you're dealing with it.
Well, we have to close at 11 o'clock at night, you know, which is really hard because people just like on the weekend, they just start coming out like at 10.
Yeah, it's true.
And then we're close, you know, so your band, my last set ends at 10:30. You know, you stop the cover about 10:05, 10:10, because you're not going to charge people for 15 minutes. Mm. And then they start coming in, and then they say, oh, get one drink, and you got to go. I mean, that's right when we get rolling. Yeah. So it's kind of hard on that. And then, you know, we always had two shifts, noon until 8, and then 8 till 4. Well, now we're down to one shift because it doesn't make sense. So we open at 3, and we close at 11, so you have one bartender work the 8-hour shift like a normal shift.
Mm-hmm.
So it's in the skeleton crew, you know, because we could only allow 44 and a half people in. So you don't need a lot of people working. So then you feel bad for the people that normally be working, like on a Saturday, you'd have two shifts, a bunch of shows, all kinds of employees, a lot of, you know, musicians and entertainers and things. And so it's all cut down drastically and still, you know, it's hard to make a buck with 44 and a half people, you know?
Yeah. And when you opened up, did you reach capacity? Did you reach 44 and a half people?
No, we haven't done that. Close, but we didn't get there. But I'll tell you, the energy in the room was so good with the band. I mean, when you haven't seen live music like in 3 months and 10 days, and all of a sudden it happens again. It just really gets your heart going, you know?
Yeah.
And it's wonderful. I mean, I was thinking like, man, there won't be a good energy between the band and the audience because there's not many people. But they were so into it. I thought it sounded like there were 100 people in there, but you know, because they were so happy.
Yeah.
So, you know, we haven't gotten there yet. There's a lot of people that are afraid to go out. It's, you know, we got like grown-ups that go. I mean, we get young people too, but there's a lot of grown-ups, and they're kind of being responsible. And then you know, if you go to by Wrigley Field, everyone's out. So we just got a different kind of crowd.
Yeah. Well, it's such a great place. Let's talk a little bit about the Uptown Poetry Slam. It was the world's first.
Yeah.
And it started in 1986. How did that start?
All right. Well, so that ended up. I was doing jazz 6 nights a week. And Sunday, I didn't do jazz because I owned a Deja Vu and I had a jazz jam session on that night, and I didn't want to compete with myself.
Gotcha.
So I'm doing nothing on Sundays, and we're open, and I think I ring like $60 or something. I'm thinking, man, I got to think of something to do that isn't jazz.
Yeah.
And then I remembered this guy, Mark Smith, did a poetry show before my jam session at the Deja Vu. And I thought, oh, yeah, that guy, he had a big crowd. It was cool. You know, Jack Kerouac, it kind of goes with jazz, blah, blah, blah. I go, let me call this guy. I call him up. I go, Mark, you want to do something on Sunday night? He goes, let me think about it. Calls me a week later. I go, okay, what do you want to do? He goes, I'm going to do a thing called the Uptown Poetry Slam. I go, what's that? He goes, don't worry about it. And I go, fine. And from that, it's all over the world. And he still does the show. I mean, not now because of the COVID thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
But he's still the guy. I mean, you know, he's been on the, you know, the 60 Minutes, and he goes all over the world. He's big stuff in Europe.
Yeah.
He's like, you know, they're wining and dining him. And so he's the guy that started the whole thing, and it started at the Green Mill.
That's
so
great.
It's kind of a cool thing.
It's a very cool thing. It's a very, very cool thing. Hey, you mentioned that you own the Deja Vu.
Yeah.
I used to go there all the time. There used to be a storefront a few doors down called Players Workshop.
Yeah, right.
And that was where I trained there before I went to Second City, and we would always, after class, we would always go to the VU. And I have memories I have memories of Chris Farley doing the turtle races. Am I nuts, or is that true?
No, you're mixed up with Ken Campbell.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Kenneth Hudson Campbell. He's actually an actor in Hollywood now.
Yeah,
you know, he was like in a lot of movies, and he does a lot of voiceovers and stuff. But he was a turtle race announcer.
Oh, okay.
And he was a bigger guy, so that's why I know you could have got him mixed up with Chris Farley.
Oh, okay, I gotcha.
All those people from the Players Workshop, like where you were, a lot of them got to be famous. You know, Bob Odenkirk, I had comedy nights there using all those guys.
Yeah, yeah.
I'd give them free draft beer. Bob Odenkirk was in it. Bonnie Hunt, Ken Campbell, Rob Schmeigel.
Yeah.
Tom Giannis. All these guys end up becoming these famous guys, and they would play this comedy night at the VU for free draft beer.
Yeah.
You know, I charge $1 to get in. We'd have like 400 people coming in. It was great.
That was a great place. I loved the VU. Like I said, every time after class, right up the street, the first thing we'd do was go and have some drinks at the VU.
Yeah, you know, I thought, because I played football in that, I thought I was going to have a sports bar. And then all of a sudden, all these actors and stuff are coming in. I'm thinking, geez, what's this? And they were cool and they were fun. So I just went with it.
Yeah.
And it turned out real well.
Yeah. Well, that was a great place too, and of course the Green Mill is great. Yeah. Best of luck, Dave, and I know it's still going to be a little difficult to get through this, but once we get through it and the mill is back up and running and open till 4, I'm sure your business will vastly improve, buddy.
Yeah, I hope so. Yeah. We need it. So
yeah. Okay.
Let's
well,
go.
Yeah, exactly.
Thanks.
So go to the mill. Go to the mill. They're open. What are your hours again? 3 to 11.
3 to 11, yes, 7 days a week.
7 days a week, 3 to 11, 7 days a week. Go in, spend some dough at the Green Mill. If there's social distancing, there are rules in place. Walk in with your mask and all that good stuff. Help Dave out, and I know a lot of bars and restaurants really need some help right now. And Dave, best of luck, my friend. I love your place.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. I'll see you later, Nick.
Okay, buddy. Take care. Right. Dave Gemmelo, owner of the Green Mill. They're open for business, and they need it. You know, a lot of the restaurants and the bars are struggling right now, and some are even closing, obviously, and we don't want the mill to close. No way.